I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at Geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
What's up, everybody? Episode number 82. Jeff, Scott, Canyon in here tonight. We don't have the cowboy, but we got three out of the four. No guests. We're just going to go good old-fashioned podcast with the Ridge Hunter guys. I don't know what the heck we're going to talk about. We'll get into something, but Episode 82. Here we go. This is the Ridge Hunter Outdoors Podcast. You'd think we could get air conditioning in this place.
A fan would be nice anyway.
Well, there's crap all over the top of the room, so.
Well, not shoes of pigeons out.
No, not literally.
Oh,
but
okay.
There's junk on top of this studio.
Well, we don't want a fan on top of the studio.
Well, you got to get it there somehow.
On the ceiling.
You're still going to have to do something to hang the fan.
We can get a box fan in here.
Well, I'm not sure it's mine.
Well, okay.
I don't know whose it is.
It has your logo on it.
Where?
You're the boss. Yeah. At least you act like it.
Well, I did start the thing. It should be worth something.
Well, that's where we're going with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean.
But I didn't have anything
boss,
to do with
we'd
this.
We'd like to have a fan.
That's studio. Right.
We're not like the cowboy. We can't just adjust our temperature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not sure he does real well. He gets in here and takes his button-up shirt off, sweating through his white tee and with his hat off.
Things get serious.
It's a quite the sight.
Yeah, no.
We yes, can pick on him. We can pick on him because
he's not here.
That's right.
It's his fault.
He's not here to keep us in line. Tonight.
Yep.
I gave him crap last time because he was a deacon up there for a while, and he said he hadn't been since January.
Is that when he joined us?
Well, I said, "Oh, did they kick you out for being a part of that secular podcast?" He said, "No, it was his. He decided he didn't want to do it anymore." For different reasons, but I figured they probably listened to a few episodes and thought, no, we can't have that.
Yeah, well, you know.
I feel like we do a decent job of keeping it within the lines.
Yeah, it's
sometimes
just,
blurred.
Sometimes
lines.
The lines get blurred. But,
that's okay.
You know.
You'll have that on your bigger jobs.
That's happened.
I've seen a lot of lines blurred in my day.
I bet. Blurry lines.
I rode with you when the lines were blurry.
Yeah, well, you know.
That was not the smartest thing I've ever done.
Did you die?
No, I did not.
All right, then.
Should you have died?
Well, that's
probably
a different story.
More than once.
Good yeah. Lord watched out over us.
Yeah, those are stories for another different podcast.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
We are not, what's the word I'm looking for? Not promoting.
Advocating.
I was going to, yeah, advertising was stuck in my head. I do this where.
That's a good 25-cent word.
Yeah, we're not advocating for that, but. Like Full Draw Fridays, a lot of happens because I'm by myself a lot of times. And then I'll be listening to a podcast or like a radio show, and mm-hmm. someone will come up to a word they're trying to say. And I'm like, this is the word you're trying to say. Like, I've got it. And then I come in here and I do the same thing. I'm like, I cannot think of what I'm trying to say.
It's the pressure.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't been doing this very long.
Kind of like crock pot.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, under pressure.
Oh.
Where'd you get that, Si?
I don't know.
I thought that was a pressure cooker.
Oh.
Or what do they call it? Instapot.
Oh, they're going broke.
Yeah. Well, I don't have one of those.
Who?
The Insta companies filed bankruptcy.
Why is that?
Did they go woke?
That's what I was going to say.
I don't know. Not that I know of.
Huh. Well, we got one. Makes good food. Yeah. That's where a lot of that good food we get during deer season comes from, actually.
Agreed.
The one I can't pry the lid off of? So
yes.
I get to, okay, that one.
That one.
It's Croc, got a safety feature on it for, like, kids under six.
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
I'm just saying.
After skinning deer for 12, 15 hours, you know, when you got to twist and turn and pull, and that's just too much.
If my mind's still working at a six-year-old capacity, I'm doing good.
Exactly.
Yeah. I saw that you'd posted a video, and I didn't get a chance to watch all of it, but...
I did?
Well, you shared one.
It wasn't me.
It was a video from deer and deer hunting.
Yes.
About, like, a kind of a smorgasbord approach to your plots.
Mm-hmm.
Which I didn't get a chance to watch it yet, but...
Golly, I'm drawing a blank.
Steve something or other?
No. I'd look it up on my phone, but it'd make a bunch of noise, and you wouldn't like that.
That's right.
Dead air is much, much
yeah,
better.
What was his name?
The guy that posted that? Or the guy that was talking on
there? The guy that was talking on it.
Oh, well, if you asked, I could have looked it up.
Well, I'll look it up real quick.
Well, we can't play it because we might get copyright in trouble.
Yeah, I'm not going to play it. I can go on my profile and see what.
Yeah.
Steve Bartella.
Bartella.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which he's been with deer and deer hunting for quite a while.
Yeah, okay. Without playing this, I'll read what the post says. It says, Steve Bartella shows us how to create gourmet buffet for deer, maximizing their attraction and increasing your chances of a successful hunt. This was season 9, episode 12, I guess, of their deer and deer hunting show, I guess. Anyway, what was it talking about?
What he was talking about is what I've been trying to do and practice on my food plot there, especially there at the house, is that you want a smorgasbord of food for the deer whenever they want it. So like one day, you know, during deer season, the fall and winter seasons, the deer might want greens one day, they might want grains the next.
Mm-hmm.
So there's days that the deer might want corn and they won't want the clover or the brassicas, and there's days that they might want the clover and brassicas and won't want the corn. So you want to give them that variety so that way you keep the deer coming to your specific location.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what he was talking about was the what he called the snake trails, where you have this long, narrow trail through the woods or whatever of food plots. Well, what he was trying to get people away from was that, you know, the deer might come to it, especially the does and younger deer, but the bucks ain't going to follow that food around to your deer stand.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to hit it wherever they go.
Wherever they happen to cross it.
And cross it and go on. He said, so whenever you're wanting to do the, what he suggested was doing the grains and the greens, mixing them together, but having a transition zone between, and then you set up your stand or blind or whatever on that transition zone and catch them. Either they're either going to go to the greens or they're going to go to the grains, one of the two. With my setup there at the house, even though it's not a technically a hunting plot,
right?
You know, we got the greens in the middle, and then we put the grains around it.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it works, and it's what I've been talking to. You want to give them something all winter long. Mm-hmm. You want to give them options, whether they want the greens. And if the greens go away during the late winter months, they still have the options of the grain. Mm-hmm. That way they stay on your property.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's we've talked about it before. And it, like what he's talking about, having that transition zone will work similarly because you could – efficient. I mean, you could effectively hunt both plots kind of at the same time.
Yeah, if I wasn't, if I didn't have my plot, was forced to have my plot where it's at.
Well, what I'm getting at, though, is like even to do it the way that you've got it going, I think is good because, again, we talked about before, like if you have corn on this side of your farm and beans on this side and you have brassicas over here and you have a clover plot over here, now, like to his point, if they want corn one day, and you're sitting your brassica plot, well, then you've just minimized your chances of hunting.
Yeah,
if you have your stuff
together.
If you have your stuff in the same plot, and I do think there's a hierarchy to it. Like if you only have so much room, go with like the grain or the greens and the clover, and then if you have that established, you can move into your grains and then put them like what he's talking about together. Where that way, if whatever they're feeling, that's where they're going to come and be in your plot. Mm-hmm. And if you have multiple plots, I think a lot of times it's beneficial. Aside from, like, the small plots in the woods where you need something real shade-tolerant, like, for example, down there in Nate's sprout patch where it stays real wet and it doesn't get a lot of sunlight, that inner sanctum blend works really good, so it's a little bit different from what else what he's got in other places. But it's similar enough that you're not drawing the deer away. I think it's important to have consistency within your plots. Even if I have one plot on this side of the farm and another plot on the complete opposite side of the farm, at least they're the same thing. So I'm, you know, at least have some kind of consistent travel from the deer. And then, you know, it's not always going to work.
Right.
But, and that's kind of what I wanted to, if I had anything to get into, it was that there's nuance to everything. I say everything. There's some hard and fast things, especially depending on where you're at in the country. But most things in hunting and life in general, but especially in the hunting world, there's nuance to everything. And there's not hard, fast rules.
Right.
Like you have to do this. You have to do this. And there's so much of that I think you see on social media and the TV shows that do it, that you have to do it this way in order to have success. You have to use this product. And I think that gets to the root of it, is it's really driven by people trying to sell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it might be a good idea to do what we're talking about in places. Other places it might not work as well. Or there may be other situations again where you have this little micro plot and you just want to do clover. And right. Not have a smorgasbord. That's going to work better for whatever spot, you know.
Right, but if you got the acres for it,
yeah,
and you know the whatever I'm trying to say, the word that escapes me.
Yeah, it's escaping me too. Because I,
but you know, if you have the acres, and
I can't think of everything for you.
Well, you should.
Well, okay,
you have for 30-some years, but you know, if you have the acres and the habitat and stuff for it, well, then that's kind of a better way to go, where you can focus them all into one spot. Like mine's a 3.5 or 3 acre plot.
Mm-hmm.
If it wasn't right next to the road, if it was off somewhere in the middle of a 200 acre feet or timber, and I had like the place we used to hunt had that 8 acre patch isolated back away from everywhere,
yeah,
man, that would be ideal. That would be, there's no way you couldn't kill a deer off that. No way.
I know.
You know, and we tried to talk the landowner into doing that, and he told us we was crazy.
Yeah, right.
And he put it into fescue and let it grow up in saplings, and there you go.
Right.
But
it's still an 8-acre patch.
It's still an 8-acre patch that the state pays him to let grow up in fescue and saplings, and he mows it down once a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, if a guy had a setup like that versus mine, you know, because mm-hmm. mine's more of a feeding plot versus a hunting plot. But still, I mean, that would just be, man, that'd be gravy right there.
And that's where the nuance comes in, I think.
Yeah.
You can't take we say it all the time when we talk about Grandpa Ray's, and we're the same way. I think there's no, like, cookie cutter.
No, there's no cookie cutter.
Because every property is different. Every situation is different.
Right.
Heck, deer herds are different. And then you talk about going from like Minnesota, Wisconsin down to Georgia, you know, those deer, South Texas, they're not the same.
And a lot of it is just trial and error.
It is.
I mean, that's all it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every year that we go into this, every time we plant, even on my spot, you know, I don't know what to expect. I know what I hope for.
Right.
But I don't know what the deer's going to do.
You think
what
the
to
deer
expect.
In Georgia have a southern accent whenever they wheeze and snort?
Probably.
I imagine it's more
and
like, grunt. Y'all.
And grunt. Yeah. You know, as opposed to.
Appreciate you.
We'll have to talk to old Alex about that next time we talk to him.
I don't know.
Have to ask him. He's hunting both. No, but there's definitely a difference, I think, even the climate, the weather, geographic has a lot to do with it, obviously. But because we go into, and we talk a lot about, this is kind of the reason for the podcast, about what we think works and what the best things for the certain situations. And we try to explain what situation we're talking about as much as possible. But we don't have it all figured out. Nobody does.
No.
And there's no one thing that's going to work all the time. It's not like, I mean, there are certain things. So like if that buck gets downwind of you, and he's not hot on a doe, you're probably done. Mm-hmm. I mean, if he's within range of smelling you downwind, you want to keep the wind in your favor. Now, even that, though, Alex told me down south where the wind plays and swirls on them, you can't hunt the wind.
Right.
But, like, for us in the Midwest, I mean, I think that's an absolute you have to do, at least to consistently kill big deer. Now, if you're going to run into one and get lucky every now and then, or you're in the rut and one's so hard up for some doe he's after, he might not even look your way when he goes downwind of you. But, like, that's, to me, kind of a hard and fast rule that you got to play the wind to be good at it normally. But there's not very many of those.
99% of it is being at the right place at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can up your advantage with food plots and...
Right. There's different ways to get to the right place yes, at the right time.
But you still have to be at the right place at the right time. There's no guarantees.
Nope.
None.
And that's been a pretty common theme even with the guys that we've talked to, the guests we've had on, is you can do everything right and everything like you're supposed to, but you still got to have a little bit of luck involved. Yep. And we've talked to some freaking killers on the podcast, like guys that have just, I mean, got
nailed
walls
it.
Full of yep. really nice deer. And it's still, you know, it's pretty much a similar song when it comes to killing these things. Mm-hmm. There are the absolutes that you want that you got to do. And then there's a whole lot of that in the middle stuff, the nuanced stuff.
There's a lot of variables.
And then there's luck at the very end of that. Mm-hmm. And like I think it was Austin that said he believes you create your own luck, which I believe too.
Right.
I mean, you can, like I said, you got to put yourself in the right situation, like you're saying. You can do these certain things to increase your chances, but at the end of the day, you still have to get lucky
yep.
to some extent.
Yep.
So.
And don't be afraid to experiment.
Right.
You know, just, I mean, there's no set guarantee that this is what you got to do to reach this goal. You know, you just got to, and every year is different.
Yeah, me and Nate talked to Clint about that last podcast. It's like, go out there and do something a little different. And I mm-hmm. think we talked about it, too, when we covered his article on still hunting.
We talked about, like you said, you got to be out there at the right time, right place. So maybe you want to go, but you don't. It's not the right time for your right place,
mm-hmm.
right? And so that's when you might try to do something different. Instead of burning out that stand or mm-hmm. screwing up that wind, you know, when the wind's not in your favor or whatever, or thermals, whatever you're looking for,
mm-hmm.
or maybe all of it combined, go out. That's the time to go out there and try something different. And that's when you may get lucky. But you do, I think you're right, you do make your own luck. Take advantage of those yeah. variables.
You're still
educate
following.
Yourself on those variables, yeah. and that will help you in your luck.
Those few absolutes, you're still following them, but you're getting out there and doing something different. Take Nate's last season, for example. Had he had, you know, 100 days to hunt, he didn't necessarily have a deer on his farm that he wanted to shoot. He had the biggest one in his scope in gun season, just decided not to shoot him because he's 4.5 and not big enough. Mm-hmm. So that would have been a situation where if he had a lot of days to hunt and he wanted to go, that's a perfect scenario to go hunt some public ground, go do a different type of hunting, even on your private ground or a permission ground. Just get out there, do a hanging hunt, try to stalk, try to still hunt, do something different. It keeps you engaged. I think it keeps you sharp, makes you a better hunter. But then, like you said, you might get lucky.
It's just like last year. Remember when I made that setup in the
Yeah.
Just in my chair and I'm standing corn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the signs was there. Everything looked good. I didn't have nothing to lose. What was I going to do? Not shoot a deer?
Exactly.
You know, right. And yep. I didn't.
Not get blown out by a doe?
Yeah, you know. Right. Right. Yeah. And I didn't, but I tried. I tried something different. It is 50-50. It could have went either way. It just happened to not go the way I wanted it to, but that's pretty much been my life story. So.
Yeah, right. Well, that's like there's a certain spot that I can hunt that I don't hunt much, but it's a place where I know that on the right day, a shooter buck might be bedded in there. And if I don't have anywhere to go for the wind, or it's just not a great day, and the wind is pretty steady out of one direction or the other, actually out of three different directions, it could be south, as long as it's not out of the north, basically, I can go in there and still hunt that woods. And had it been mature deer two different times, I feel like I could have got a shot off at a nice buck. The one time was a 3.5-year-old deer, and the other time it wasn't even that big. But bedded, where had it been a 4.5, 5.5-year-old deer that I wanted to shoot, it's just another opportunity. And like you said, you got nothing to lose.
Right.
I don't hunt there that much anyway, especially if you're talking like public ground. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't have a private ground that you can hunt or permission ground, on public ground, if you're only hunting public ground, what do you got to lose?
Right.
You know, you go in there and you booger up a spot, there's thousands of more acres of public ground that you can go find somewhere where the deer are.
Yep.
And that's something that the public guys that we've talked to, which has been a bunch, the guys that hunt public ground, is go out there and find the sign, you know. So even if you do mess up one spot, you got these thousands of acres to go. As long as you can find another place that has relevant sign, or recent sign, then you still have a place to go hunt. So you don't really have that much to lose, even if you are just a public land hunter.
Right.
It's not like you go to your, like at the cabin, for example. If I go in there and screw that up on a buck, particularly the one I'm going to be hunting this year that I hunted last year, if I blow him out of there, he's gone. Mm. I mean, he could move 300, 400 yards off his natural travel corridor and I would never see him again.
Yep.
So it's not like you're in that situation if you're on public ground or if you're taking these risks on some ground that you don't normally hunt. You can go out there and be a little more risky and give yourself a little bit more chance at the being in the right place at the right time. Yep. By doing different things. And I do think it keeps you a little more interested, engaged in all that. But
that, and then there's a learning curve to it too, you know. You get outside the norm, what you're taught to do, mm-hmm. and this is the way you're supposed to do it.
You might find something out new.
Exactly. Yeah. Something that works at that particular spot or works for you, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
Or in a certain situation.
Or things that don't work, too.
Yeah.
You know.
And then, again, you haven't lost anything.
No.
As long as it's not, you're not doing this stuff on your target buck, you know, in your best right. location. But.
And that's what I like about that place that I hunt down south.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I go there expecting that this is where I'm going to kill my meat deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's where that's just what I expect. But I also experiment with different stuff, locations. When, you know, it's always a learning
turkey
process.
Turkey permits.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know,
yeah.
Don't buy one year, turkey's beating you to death. Right. Next year, you buy one, there's none to be seen.
Right.
But, you know.
Not very many on even camera that year.
No, it's pathetic.
Don't buy one this year.
I won't.
I'll get one.
You get one.
No
way. Put your tag on it.
No. No.
We wouldn't. No.
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 Sorry.
I'll kill.
Back to that advocating word that I was talking about earlier.
That's that 15-cent word.
Yeah.
I'll kill the turkey, and you'll have fooled them because you didn't buy one. And I'll sneak up on them.
Is that how it works? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. OIT.
We'll try that plan. Yeah. See
Old
how it
Indian
works
trick.
Out for. And right. we'll see how that works out for us this year.
And you can still go down there and get your meat, and it'll be all the same.
Yeah. Yep. But
or whatever you said.
Whatever. Yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah.
Same as.
Yeah. But that's a spot where you can go and try something a little different.
Yeah, I can go outside the norm, outside what the quote unquote boundaries are or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, to deer hunting. And I really enjoy going down there. And of course, I got to stand there. And there's a few things I want to do this year. I want to try down there this year.
I think what's intriguing to me about that spot, you never know what somebody's going to bump off that public ground. You never know. Yep. You might got, you know, how many times have you seen deer on your cameras, never seen before,
right.
never see them again?
Yep.
Or how many times have you sat there and seen deer that weren't on your cameras?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, people are in and out of that.
And I think it's a spot there, too, even with along that where it's at, that natural travel corridor. Especially in November, you get random bucks through there checking for does.
Yeah,
you know does
if I had the freedom to be there during the rut. But.
Well,
you do.
Yeah, okay. Then I have to hear about it.
Yeah, I think that's what intrigues me about it is it's one of them spots. I mean, most of the other spots that we go, you know within reason what's there. You've scouted it. There's cameras. We've been doing it for 2 or 3 years or 10, whatever it is. And you kind of know. But down there, you just don't know.
No, you have no idea.
It might not be nothing, or it might be the biggest thing you've seen this year.
Which is another thing about going and hunting. The time I went down there with you guys and hunted that public spot, or just hunting somewhere different that you don't hunt much, is instead of getting burnt out, again, I keep going back to Nate's because that's just a really good example of you. He knows what's there.
Mm-hmm.
He's been hunting it forever. He runs cameras on it. He knows where the deer move. He knows where to put a camera, to set cameras to know what's on his property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that doesn't mean there couldn't be a random one move through in November, because that always happens. I mean, a lot of times it happens. But in that situation, he's sitting there, and basically he knows what's probably going to come by. He's sitting and thinking, okay, if it comes by, maybe it's bigger than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best you can hope for. If you go hunt some piece of public ground, there might be a 200-inch deer running around in there.
It's the anticipation of the unknown.
Yep.
I mean, really, that's what it boils down to down there.
Which is why some guys don't run cameras at all. I prefer the benefits of having them and knowing what's there and knowing their patterns as opposed to the benefit of not knowing what's there and having that anticipation.
Whenever I hunt down there, I'll run my cameras. I still like to know what is there regularly.
Right.
So that way I know what to target.
Yeah.
You know, but you still don't know what's going to, what might just happen to show up.
And it's a situation where if you have other places to hunt, like Steve Shirk was talking about with however many cameras he runs. Do you remember the number he said? It was something outrageous.
Yeah, it was crazy.
But he, a lot more he does two.
He does guiding service too. So 100. Yeah. I think it might have been
I think
like
it was upwards of 200 or something.
Something close to 200.
It was crazy.
Anyways,
I could be.
He runs all these cameras because he's
not on purpose.
Tens of thousands or thousands of acres of timber.
Right.
And he's guiding guys hunting out there too. So he needs to know, okay, yes, there might be something that comes through here occasionally or a random buck. But I need to know where my best chance is to see a buck where he's moving through more consistently so I can more efficiently and effectively hunt and spend my time. I'm not wasting time out here where something might come by when I've got a 150-inch five-year-old that's coming through three times a week.
Right.
You know, that I think that is that benefit alone of having cameras outweighs the benefit of not knowing and having that anticipation.
Right.
And you still do have that. And I had the similar thing at the cabin. Every year since I've ran cameras out there, I've had new bucks show up, at least one new buck. And last year I didn't get a picture of him. Well, I got a picture of him as the day I shot him. I'll have at least one new buck that comes through there in the rut, and he might stay for a week, he might stay for 2 weeks, he might come in and go out and leave. So I still have that. There still is that possibility, even running cameras and knowing what's there regularly.
Well, even just to get away from the public ground aspect of it where I hunt some at, let's just look at the pictures and stuff that we've seen there at my house. You know, it's a 20-acre woodlot.
Yep.
And look at the different bucks that we had on camera that we never saw when we was hunting.
No.
You know.
No, they're just passing through.
They're just passing through. And so, you know, you go in there with the mindset that I don't really know what I'm going to see, what's going to come off the creek or out of the thicket or whatever and come through here. But, you know.
Today might be the day.
Today might be the day.
Yep.
And, of course, you know, well, wherever I hunt that there behind the house, I pay more attention to the wind. I pay more attention to what I'm doing because, you know, I've got the does and all that stuff going on in there. I don't want to blow them out and get them where they know exactly where I'm at.
Well, they pretty near do anyway. You know, most of there's one in there. I guarantee you, she'll know where you're at.
Yeah, well,
that's just
no. She ain't never busted me. Not in my woods.
That. I was
the one on the creek has busted me a few times.
If there's an old doe, she's going to bust you, Jeff. That's just the way it is.
So in the last 2 years, I think I've hunted back there twice probably. But yeah, before that, so 20, I think I probably started in 18 hunting back there is when we started putting in that food plot. Mm-hmm. So 18, 19, 20, 21, 4 years I had shots at. I shot that one big old buck that we ended up having pictures of later, the big 8-point, and then missed that 140s 9-point that was in there the other time. So 2 out of 4 years I had chances in there at one just because I was in there. Again, we weren't blowing deer out of there. We were hunting it smart, and I just I was there at the right time. It was it was that day,
right?
You know, and one of them was completely random. The one that I shot that came back later we didn't find was, it was like 70 degrees. The reason I went there that
there
day
was... There was no reason for him to be there.
No, at 4:30 in the afternoon, eating in that clover plot. I mean, he was just... I don't know what the deal was.
He'd come off the creek and was headed to the thicket, and he bedded down there, and...
Yeah, I mean, it just completely random.
Yep.
And then the second time he was in there, he was with does. That made more sense.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you just... You never know, and it's a situation there where I was just going there because it's close to the house, and it was a warm day, so I didn't really want to go to the cabin. It wasn't a great day, you know, hunting-wise, so I thought, well, this is a place where maybe one will come by. I'll go try it, and sure enough, he's standing there in a clover plot as I'm walking into the stand.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's always that. But that's, to the greater conversation, that's where that nuance comes in of, okay, just because I did this thing that the guy told me to on Instagram and used his product doesn't mean it's going to work in a certain situation. Right. And if I, it might work if I don't use it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I might, even if I'm not setting up my property, this is the way that he's telling everybody to set up properties or using this product that they're pushing, you still have a chance at them.
Yeah.
Are you insinuating that everything on the internet is not true?
I am insinuating
there's
that.
There's too many variables.
No, no. I'm not saying everything on the internet is not true. I am saying that because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's more what I'm getting at.
Good Lord. Well, it's not true for every situation.
At least that.
Yeah.
And that's where I like the guys that we've talked to, and like Austin comes to mind because he does similar stuff to what we do, talking to Alex, talking to Clint, talking to Steve, all these guys, and I'm leaving some out.
Talking to Uncle Jeff.
Yeah, and Easton. They're not saying things that are hard and fast, like, okay, this is what you got to do. It's going to work every time. If you want to kill a mature buck, you have to use this product that we're selling. Mm-hmm. You got to do it the way that we're doing it on our show.
You got to sow this seed.
It's, hey, here's what I do in this situation, and it's worked for me.
Before.
And I think this is the best way to do it because of this, this, and this for this situation. Not, you know, here's what you got to do because I said so.
Yeah. I am excited, though. I really want to try this, especially down there next to that public ground, about what Easton and his dad had come up with the mock rubs.
Yeah, rub and post.
Oh, man, I want to try that so bad. And I think that would be the prime place to try that because, you know, we don't know what comes and goes through there. No. But if we can get them to come and go through there using, you know, using their tactic, well, then that's going to up the odds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether it works or not, I don't know.
It's a good place to experiment.
I haven't tried it. Right.
Right.
But I can try it there. And if it does work, great. If it don't work, well, I ain't lost nothing except, you know, a few dollars in their product.
Yep. To me, that's a similar thing to like the sprays that we use and stuff for doing your mock scrapes. It's not something that's going to be like a food plot, like just a set attractant, but it's more of like a movement sweetener, I guess you could call it, where if he's moving through here, maybe you pull
him
over.
Come over here.
And then he starts moving that way more often.
Yeah.
And he hits that thing. It's not like you're going to pull him because he found the food one time and keeps coming back from somewhere he completely wasn't.
No.
It doesn't have that same attraction, right. But I think it definitely could move them through an area in a location that you'll be able to shoot them, get a picture of them, whatever, more often.
Right.
Like, same thing with the mock scrapes. Yeah. It's not like an attractant. Water hole is kind of a similar way. Mm-hmm. If it's not a big pond or something, it's just a reason for them to be where you need them to be when you're there. At least that's kind of my thought on it.
Well, I mean, yeah, and if you can get them to habitually come there.
Yeah, and that's the idea.
Yeah, well then,
just get them to move
chances.
Through there more often.
Yeah.
Yep.
And like I said, there again, you experiment.
We're going to run out of change for these words you guys are using.
I've only used one.
Well,
but I mean, you experiment, you try new things. If they work, they work. If they don't, they don't.
Right.
But, you know,
that's how you learn.
If they don't work, you haven't really lost much, but maybe a little bit of time and a few dollars, you know, but
And I think there
dollar
are
dollar ain't that, worth nothing anymore anyway, so what the hell.
I think there are things that you can almost take to the bank that are going to work.
Right.
If you don't have food in your area and you put in a good food plot, deer are going to come to it.
Right.
That doesn't mean that a ton of mature bucks are going to come to it. If there's none in the area, there's none in the area.
Right.
But deer are going to feed in that food plot because you don't have food around. If you don't have any water to speak of, if you put water there for them, as long as they find it, they're going to come use it. But like what you're saying, there may be some tactics and stuff that we read about in a magazine or you talk to somebody, hear some idiot on a podcast talking about it, like us. Now, I'm not talking about anybody else, of course. But you go try it, and then, okay, either it did work or it didn't work. And that's how you learn what works for your situation in your deer herd.
Yeah.
Speaking of water.
And your location in the country.
On a serious note.
What do you think? I haven't been serious this whole time?
I was looking at Jeff.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
This is a serious face.
Well, yeah. It's, yeah, okay.
Seriously something.
At any rate, Speaking of water, on a serious note, and so, where we're at in the Midwest, how especially where we're at, when how many places do you think that there's not water close enough?
I mean, just slim to none.
Yeah, I mean, if there's water on
there's a creek
every 80
or,
acres or
I think it does depend on the year too. I think if you would have talked about last into last summer, there were definitely places I think where there wasn't a ton of water because a lot of those creeks, you know, dry up. We don't.
I don't know. The creek behind my house never goes dry.
There's spots in those creeks that aren't going to dry up, and in our area, they're all spring fed, even in the middle of summer.
Yeah,
they're not running.
But
they're
if
not
that
as
was
full
the,
as they were,
but there's still water there.
But if we didn't have times where there wasn't good water everywhere, we wouldn't have the EHD outbreaks that we have occasionally.
But they're drinking that water. Mm-hmm. There's water to drink.
But not,
not
very
be,
much.
No, it may not
but
be
But it
much.
Doesn't have to do with
it's
the
just
water.
To
it has to do with the... It has to do with the...
well, potentially.
Oh.
The midge is in the water.
The midge is
but,
in the water.
But what happens is that they all go to the same water hole, which is why it becomes widespread, but they get into that mud and stuff that you see when the water goes down in those ponds and whatever. That's where those live.
In 2012, when we had the big EHD outbreak, and it wiped out, I'm going to say right here in our area, I'd say it wiped out at least 75% of the herd.
Hundreds of bucks, literally.
Yeah, bucks and does. I mean, you couldn't drive down the levee where we farmed at without smelling dead deer everywhere. Mm-hmm. It was just awful. Well, a lot of that, it wasn't because of the creek, river, whatever you want to call it, is because of the old cutoffs, mm-hmm. what we call sloughs.
Sloughs, yeah.
You know.
Into your mic.
Is because the old cutoff, the old cutoffs and sloughs had dried up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a little bit of water in there, but there's a lot of that mud, and that's where the midges
attracted
to. I heard
that somewhere.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it's not because of like the creeks and the rivers and stuff like that, is because you have the places like that where stagnant water, nothing mm-hmm. new coming into it, and it dries up, and then the mud and you know, mm-hmm. things go on and happen like they do. And that's where a lot of our kill around this area came from.
And I think it depends on the deer, too, because you talk from one deer to another.
You talk from one deer to another.
Not,
talk.
Not to one deer.
That's what you
if
said.
If you're talking from one deer to another, is what I said. Oh. Yeah. One of them might have a home range of 200 acres. Another one might have a home range of however many square miles. If there's no water in his 200 acres, then for him, there's not any water. He's going to have to expand
that to go
find water.
I'm guessing how many places in where we're at can you not find water on 200 acres?
Right.
Seriously. I mean, just... And that just kind of goes back to reverting to trying to use something as an attractant. I'm not sure water is something that you really want to mess with much because most of it's...
No, I wouldn't say it's an attractant for sure.
Most of it in this area is plentiful enough that they can get a drink in their range, whether it's 200 acres or, you know, 5 square miles.
You don't have to get very far north, though, I wouldn't think, away from the river system. To find 200 acres that didn't have water on it.
I ain't going very far north anyway.
Well, some people listen to this podcast,
I
wouldn't
go north if I had to. It's cold up there.
No, yeah. I think you're right. If you're going to spend, unless it's a situation where you can get on a map and you can't see any water and you know your neighbors don't have ponds and there's no wet creek system or no river around, then you might look at water.
Right.
But that's definitely not the first thing I'm looking at when it comes to habitat improvement for deer. You know, I'm going to food and cover, I think, are the first two, and then you go to water. And like you said, a lot of places are going to have water somewhere at least close enough anyway. With the,
well, if they didn't have the deer, wouldn't be there in the first place.
Yeah, they don't know where their water supply is.
Right.
Yeah, they have to.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, though. If they didn't have the deer, wouldn't be there in the first place.
Well, you
knew
where
to get
all the watering holes were.
If you're trying to get deer there and you don't have water, that kind of makes the point, though.
Right.
But,
and
yeah.
Even when they dried up, we didn't die of midges.
Well, we didn't share much either. No.
That's a good thing. There'd been a lot more than EHD going around.
I have morals, you know.
Well, name one.
Yeah. That's I thought about talking to that, but we may do a podcast on it later in the summer.
Morals?
It would, yeah, that too.
I have to leave some of us out. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I'll get Nate in here for that one.
There you go. Atta boy.
No, he'd be the only one qualified for that discussion.
We've got standards.
Yeah, sure. So, high or not, remains to be seen, but.
Depends on where you set the bar.
I thought about doing a podcast.
Use a product of one of them, so. Yeah.
It would probably be a Friday episode, but talking
pretty
about.
High bar.
Like the EHD difference in that and like the CWD and stuff. Because I think there's a lot of people who don't completely understand the EHD because, and you hear it referred to as the deer flu or blue tongue or EHD. And the EHD is it's a type of hemorrhagic disease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're like, there's different ones. But deer, I think some it's people not, probably think that they can't live through that, but or we don't have it all the time. But at least on some level, EHD happens every year, and especially in the South and Southeast where it gets real dry. They have EHD outbreaks, if you want to call them that, to some extent every year. And actually, if a deer has EHD and lives through it, then they build their immune system.
Oh, God, let's not get into herd immunity.
Well, I'm not talking about herds yet. I'm trying to get this canceled. But they actually have a better chance of living through it the next time.
They'll be wanting to give them a shot.
Giving the deer a
then
shot.
Then they'll die of heart attacks in 4 years.
They'll have Travis Manitis. It will really wipe out the deer herd.
Yeah.
Oh, Spotify's going to flag us for misinformation on EHD and doctor vaccines. Well,
McDermott will be out and whatever else.
McDermott.
Well, whatever that.
Moderna, McDermott, whatever.
Yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah.
You know where I'm going with it.
Well, the McDermott. Yeah, I think the McDermott one's the one that gives you Travis Manitis.
I think that's right.
Travis.
Yeah. Or whatever.
Or, you know, similar to that, anyway.
Yeah.
Close.
But similar to that, I think there's a lot of misinformation about
the hell you think.
You think.
The EHD and the CWD, not among other things. So I think it would be, I think as we get later in the summer when that stuff starts to happen a little more. Because every year you see on Facebook, people are like, oh my gosh, we're having an EHD outbreak. I found a dead deer by the water. Okay, it literally kills deer every year. It happens. Those midges get in those water holes and those mud, and some deer are going to come down with it and die.
But EHD is not transferable from one deer to another.
Right, and they don't always die from it.
No.
Like where don't. CWD, that's a death sentence for a deer.
Yes.
There's no cure for it. There's not a ton of research on it.
And it is transferable from one deer to another.
Which is why Illinois doesn't allow you to bait. That their reasoning is because they don't want deer feeding off the same food.
Yeah. Yeah, which gets me because the two biggest ways that the CWD
not
is,
that they don't naturally, but you know.
Well, why would you think that, Jeff?
I'm just guessing.
They don't share food.
No. Oh.
They're civilized.
Are they?
Yeah, well, maybe in the mind of some politicians. But the two biggest ways.
They're monogamous, too, ain't they?
Something like that.
Yeah. There's another 15 cents.
I know. I'm out of change. And we're going to have to get a loan for the rest of this podcast. The two biggest ways that spreads one of them is illegal across state lines, is the reason you have to skin out the heads because of any of the spinal cord material or the brain matter and all that. That's one of the biggest ways that CWD spreads. And then the other one is deer farms because they load these deer up, and if one becomes infected with it, they take it. I saw a map of one where these deer had traveled in trailers, and they're infecting every deer they come in contact with, potentially. Wild deer that they're coming in contact with around the fences and whatnot, and they're going all over the Midwest and spreading CWD, which that's totally legal, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a lucrative business, which is probably why it's legal.
There's money in it.
And they can tax the crap out of it, I'm sure.
Follow the money.
Yeah. Yep. But we can't put out minerals to potentially help the health of our deer because they might transfer CWD through their saliva.
Whether we agree with it or not, that's the theory of the state of wherever you're at.
I'm not saying that might be a little bit,
I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure if there's a CWD deer that's spitting up minerals, you know, and the next one comes along, that's
probably spits up minerals.
That's probably what slobbers all over whatever you want, whatever term you'd like to use, Mr. Fry.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. I was being nice.
But if we're still allowing deer farms and moving deer all over the country, why can we not give minerals?
What's the difference in that and a farmer runs a grain cart over at the corner of his field because he want to make just one more round.
Right.
And then an infected deer eats out of that corn pile and then another one comes along. Same thing.
Well, that wasn't
or a food plot or eating off the same ear of corn, even standing corn.
There's a whole lot more corn in the end of the field because the farmer wanted to make one more round than there is mineral.
Yeah. Wow. And there's no benefit to that corn laying on the end of the field.
There's a lot of variables there.
On the farmer part or the mineral part?
Well, yeah. On the farmer part. But
I got a variable right here. Might have something to do with it occasionally.
I mean,
only when they open the door.
Blunt?
Candid.
Candid.
That's
thank you.
I told you guys, I'm out of flipping change. We got no more.
Now, that's not a 15-cent word.
No, that's at least 10, though, and I'm out of dimes.
To be candid, though, whatever state you're living in, hunting in, even here in Illinois, whether we agree with their guidelines or not and think that they're full of nonsense, which Illinois is a Democratic state, so there you go. But, you know.
Tends to be full of nonsense.
Yeah. So, but
where's that bleep button at? We're gonna get canceled.
You still have to follow the guidelines.
Doesn't matter whether you believe in it or not. No. The law is the law,
and there's so much nonsense and just ludicrous going on in this country anymore. I mean, my God.
That's why whenever we want to put out minerals, we have to go to a non-CWD county in Missouri,
right?
Test them out over there. And that's fine.
Yeah.
We got guys over there.
Yeah.
That's where the big D's at.
Yeah. Because, I mean, we don't do it here.
All of them or just the one?
All the big D's?
Yeah. I don't think they're all
there's
only
one big D.
That's
okay.
Right. I let the cat out of the bag. Now everybody knows where he's at.
Well, yeah. Iron County, right?
Mass exodus.
Iron County, Missouri. Ain't that right?
Close.
Well, yeah. Somewhere like that. No, let's not give all the secrets away. He's got to have some private life.
Some cushion there. My Lord.
Oh, he's got cushion.
Wear that boy down to a nubbin.
You're thinking of his brother.
Yeah.
Fluffy.
Fluffy.
Yeah. He's got cushion. I don't even know where we got off track there.
I don't know either.
We run that sumbitch right off the rail.
He better throw the switch to get us back on the lane here.
We crashed.
We did. No, actually, though, one thing I did want to talk about, we started talking about it earlier, was we're talking about maybe replanting your corn.
Maybe. Oh, my God. We got to.
Because we had, well, for one thing, it's been dry.
So what are you thinking? What happened?
What am I thinking?
Yeah.
Well,
looking your way.
It was way too wet earlier this spring. We couldn't get in there and work the ground and everything and plant like we needed to. With my schedule, work schedule, and Canyon's schedule, it just didn't mesh. Then when we was finally able to get into there and do it, well, then they shut the spigot off. And there was no water to be found or bought or anything else. So I'm thinking what we did, and this maybe you had to go with what you know. You had to plant the seed into the moisture for it to do anything. I think the moisture, even though we planted it, the corn especially, you know, 2.5 inches deep.
Probably, yeah, 2.
I think the moisture got away from the corn before it actually germinated good and sprouted. Now, the milo and the beans, we planted them the same depth. They all come up. But it takes more moisture to get that corn. And plus, I was planting old corn. You know, it's probably, well, he said year old corn, but I'm guessing it's probably 2 or 3, knowing the guy I got it off of. But, you know, it is free, so I can't complain about that.
That's your favorite color.
Yeah.
You're right.
Right. I can't complain. I can't gripe about that.
No.
So anyways, I think the moisture got away from the corn before it was able to actually spike up and get through. So I got about a 10% stand.
I figured, yeah, it probably we planted it just enough in the moisture where it got just enough to get started. And
it
then
swelled up and then it died.
Dried up and didn't get enough to go ahead and
sprout. The beans and the mottle did great, except for the rabbits that have attacked the beans.
Right, which we knew was going to happen based off of last year.
Yeah, we know that's going to happen. But
which is fine. Nothing wrong with having rabbits around.
No.
I might get hungry one day.
But the corn, I was kind of disappointed in that. But that was as much my fault as far as weather conditions also. Now we've got, I went and checked tonight. I've got, since we had that inch and a half rain last Sunday, I've got moisture down less than a quarter of an inch. And so as soon as we can get in there, as soon as Canyon gets freed up before he can, I think our best bet is just go in there and no-till that corn, re-no-till it in there. Mm-hmm. And then by that time, it's going to be whatever happens, happens.
Which also reminds me, in the video that's going to come out soon, hopefully, I mentioned on, I think, the last Friday, where we mowed your clover and then we did the planting and stuff, the videos you took. I'll put them together. Lost Mike. And I'll put those together and put it up. But on the video where I was mowing, I showed and mentioned why you don't currently have the ability to come get the planter with your tractor and plant yours. So
because she has a sore foot. She threw her shoe, didn't she?
I don't think you've been on to share that since it happened. Now, a little bit of a mishap.
Yeah, I mean, I had the bright idea I was going to go out there, and it was a good idea. It worked out good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went out there with my tractor.
Really close to working out good.
Yeah, with my tractor and my implement. And I worked.
What, in your disc?
His disc, too.
My disc, implement, whatever you want to call it. And I went out there and worked.
Your tool.
I worked the whole food plot where we was going to plant. Had it worked down good, actually. Leveled out.
Yeah.
It looked good. I was on my last end row. And as soon as I got to the end, I was going to raise her up and take her to the shed. Well, I got to the end, and before I could raise it up, I heard, boom, and blew the tire out.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you were leaning.
The rear tire, yes. The $500 tire.
Of course.
And so she sat out there for a while until I got
a while? It sat out there long enough it looked like a South Georgia trailer park.
Sit out there long enough.
I wouldn't go that far.
The neighborhood watch was looking.
Well, they was worried about it.
People were moving cars,
posting
in.
Flyers. Start a picket line. My gosh, they were right in Congress.
Yeah. We got it picked up. It's not eyesore no more.
Thank the Lord.
We got it picked up and moved to the shed. So now she's waiting to get reshoed, which might be a minute or two.
So it's in it's on blocks. It's just in the shed where we can't see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. That's better.
It doesn't look like a
South Georgia trailer park.
Exactly.
Man, I don't know why we're ragging on Georgia so much.
Nothing against South Georgia. I've been there. I love it.
Really?
Yeah, except for the alligators walking through the store. But
they
I guess you get used
no
to it.
Got no alligators in South Georgia.
Oh, now I beg to differ.
Four-legged or two?
Four.
Okay.
Well, they could have two.
I'm pretty sure they do.
I wasn't there long enough to see if they had any snappers or not.
Walking through the Walmarts.
More questions for Alex next time we talk to him. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get him in here. That'll be a lot of fun, I think. I had a lot of fun talking to him on that podcast. And he hunts up somewhat in our area, so he gets up here close enough to make the drive in.
No.
We'll have to get some air conditioning in here. He'll melt.
Well,
he might be used to
it. No, he'll be used to it.
Yeah. By November, it'll be cold. Or whenever he's in here.
We went down to Madisonville.
It ain't as bad as the old studio.
That's a fact.
Yeah. We went down to Madisonville, Georgia.
We had a fan.
To get a coon dog one day. And yeah.
Did you go down there with Big Al?
No. I went down Buddy Keith.
Oh.
But yeah. That was quite the adventure we had down there. Alligators walking in a convenience store and stuff. Yeah. It was
it a good dog?
It was I have no idea. It wasn't mine.
Oh, okay.
So
I don't know if the trip was worth it or not.
Oh, it is worth it. Oh,
okay.
Not specifically as far as coon dogs, but
it's
worth the adventure.
Yeah. We need to get down there and go to the show that Rodney was telling us about.
What show was that?
Oh, well, it was in Alabama, right? He said.
Oh, yeah.
The Southern show. Now, there's there's the Dixie Deer Classic, which is in
not in Iowa.
No.
It's at the same time as Iowa show. And it's in Alabama. But
maybe
vote for that one. It's a lot warmer down there.
There's also one in the fall down there, and I think that's the one, and someone else, might have been Alex, was telling me about. I think it would be worth checking out. We got the Deer and Beer Fest coming up here in August, so I don't know how that all worked out, because I liked that show a lot, and I think it'll be another good one this year. But I think it'd be interesting to go down there and see, talk to some different people.
Oh, yeah, I mean, we like to fish and stuff, so
they do a lot of catfishing.
They do a lot of catfishing down there. I like following on Facebook. I'm not trying to give them a plug or anything, but
I don't care.
I like watching Jeff and Hannah Barron, and they go they go down there all the time they advertise that Alabama show down there. And so I'm guessing if they go down there I'm sure that the realtor guys and all them go down there also.
Yeah, I think that's probably the show that Waddell's at most of the time.
I think so. I think Waddell's down
there.
Of course,
he was up at Nebraska or something this last past year, or North Dakota or something like that. But when we were in Iowa.
Well, we've seen Lee and Tiffany up at Iowa, so.
I think, and someone again that we had on recently, and they all run together. Maybe it was Clint that said that the Iowa show, I think it was him. If you have not been to that one, and you're a serious Midwestern deer hunter, that's a show to go to.
The Iowa show?
Yep. And I think the Dixie Deer Classic is like that for Southern deer hunters. And this one in the fall, I'm not sure what the name of it is, but from the sounds of it, it's similar too.
Yeah.
I think it'd be cool because that's a different, I mean, whitetails are whitetails, but they are different. And I think it would be interesting to go down there and just.
Oh, yeah.
See, you know, and talk to those guys about what they're doing, and even just talking to Alex for an hour, an hour and a half plus after the podcast, it interests me to learn the other ways of hunting. Talking the same way I was talking to Steve from out in Pennsylvania,
right?
Like that dude, he knows a lot of stuff about hunting those mountain bucks. It just interests me, not that I'm gonna go do it, but it's just the different way to get to the same result that we're trying to get to. Getting behind a big mature buck on the ground, but I think it would be cool to go down there and talk to those guys and then introduce them to the podcast in case they're ever interested in coming up and doing some Midwestern hunting too. They could have a resource for some semi-sufficient information.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah.
I'd be all for going south.
I'm looking forward to the Deer and Beer Fest this year too. I think it's going to be good again.
That's in August, you say?
And we're going to be up there with Luke's going to be there, Oswald, that we talked to before. The Radix guys are going to be up there.
There's a vacation.
I would say that Rodney's going to be up there.
I have to work for you on my vacation.
Not all of them.
Most of them.
At any rate.
Yeah. I think it'll be good. We'll be right there in that block with those guys. So
pick your poison.
Yeah, you've got your... Rodney's there, and is your other guy that you're talking to there, too?
Which one is that? Radix, yeah, he's going to be up there. We'll be in the same block as him, who Rodney works with.
Correct.
We talked to him up at the Iowa show. The guy that runs that, and he's a cool guy, so we might see if we could have him on or something.
So you've already got a spot reserved for us?
Yep. I have a deposit on
us. You just told me you had to work.
I said I didn't know. Most likely I'll have to because that always plays out.
And that show is...
I know a guy.
Do you? I know a woman.
Wow.
It's even better.
There you go.
Depending on what you're looking for.
Well,
we know.
We know.
Yeah, we know what he's talking about. That show is really good for not only getting people in and talking to, because it was pretty busy at times, but also going around and talking to the other vendors and stuff and the other people that are there, because there's more downtime at that show than there is the Iowa show, so you get a little more time away from the booth, which we have kind of the luxury of anyway, because like at Iowa, we've got four guys up there. All four of us are up there, so we can kind of come in and out. But you don't want to go bother other people when they're talking to somebody at their booth, trying to tell them about what they're doing or
that's
their
like
product
up there at Iowa. You know, I wouldn't go talk to Easton and his dad until I knew the crowd was died down and stuff.
There's a lot more opportunity for that, like Sunday afternoon at the Deer and Beer Fest.
When we used to play the ATA show, when we had the shops, we would get there early. And so before the show opened, that's when you went and talked. Mm-hmm. And then they generally had, for the vendors, they generally had after the show something going on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was music. Sometimes it was just a
they got that at the Deer and Beer
bar
Fest
or whatever like that. And that's where you make your
connections.
Networking.
Yeah, where's that? I got 15 seconds.
He said he was at here. I'll throw up.
Networking. No. That's a pretty simple word.
Yeah. The networking. That's where you would do that amongst the vendors, so you weren't bothering them during their busy time, and they weren't bothering you. Right. So.
Which at Iowa, you can still do that a little bit before the show, but not everybody shows up that early, and then that's still only a limited amount of time. So if you want to go talk to a whole list of people or different people that either you know or that you want to maybe make a connection with and talk to, you don't exactly have all the time in the world. But I think it, like up there at the Deer and Beer Fest, where maybe Sunday afternoon or even Friday evening late, there'll be a little bit more downtime. But I mean, I say that there was still a real, I mean, there was a good crowd last year through Saturday early afternoon. So, yeah. I mean, me and Rod stayed busy talking to people. It's interesting. I always like going to those. And again, like Easton was talking about, and like, Nate's talked about before when he used to travel around to a lot of those shows with back in his Team Harvest days. You see a lot of the same people, so you get to know them, you know, and you can go talk to them. And we're definitely going to do some podcasts from up there. I already talked to Luke about it, and he's going to be up there, so we're going to do a podcast with him and maybe get some of the other guys on. And we'll have some podcasts from up there with those guys. That'll be good too.
It is a small. When I say small, I mean it seems like a small group,
a smaller venue.
No, just like the
like
people,
the industry.
The industry, it's not a huge industry. Mm-hmm. It's a huge people. There's
a
lot of people.
It's a huge industry.
But the people, the business people within the industry or whatever, that's a fairly small group of people.
It's not like other industries, I think, where it's really competitive and it's pretty cutthroat. Now, there are guys, I think, that are like that. Obviously, there's guys that are like that. There's bad eggs in it. There's guys that are just looking out for themselves. But I think where the hunting industry stands out is there a lot of the people that are in it are on the same page, and they're in it for the same reasons, and they all enjoy the same things, and we have somewhat the same mindset. Now, we have different ideas and different ways we do things, but we can sit down and talk with a lot. I mean, most of the guys that are in the industry and have a good civil conversation with them.
Oh, I agree.
And have
make
a good
no
time.
Mistake. They're cutthroat. They're out there for the money. Some of them are.
Yeah, exactly. But what I'm saying is I think the hunting industry has less of that than maybe some other industries, which is what you're talking about.
Agreed.
So the community is a little tighter. Yes. And those guys that are like that, word travels pretty fast.
Yeah.
I mean, we ain't been in this very long, and we know of guys that, you know, and not to mention any
names. We
don't
want to talk to We're not going to talk to it.
Exactly. Yeah, and there's guys that, would, you know, that we definitely want to talk to at some point just for those reasons. But, and like you said, it is a, I think that's what makes it a small, seem like a smaller community because more people are on the same page than you would see in other industries
I think it's most folks get in this business because they love it. Mm-hmm. And then they found a way to make a living doing it. I would say a vast percentage of people that are in the industry are that way. Not necessarily if you're a CEO at Coca-Cola. Mm-hmm. You didn't become a CEO of Coca-Cola because you like to drink Coke.
Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
You became a CEO of Coca-Cola because you wanted to make a lot of money.
But I think that's the difference between the CEO of Phillips 66 versus mm-hmm. this, you know, some of these guys that are. But now I'm talking about huge companies, and in the hunting industry, there are companies that are close to probably that big, and those CEOs are in there to make money. I mean, that's why they're there too.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of smaller.
But even
corporations,
if you,
companies, whatever.
Wait a minute. You're saying I can make money for doing what I'm doing here tonight?
Yeah, maybe one day.
Tonight? Doing this?
Yeah.
That's
what I thought.
No. No, we aren't.
We pay for quality around here.
No. Have you ever made money sitting, talking, drinking beer?
No.
And they ain't going to start now.
Okay. Well, maybe they should.
I think even those guys that run some of the bigger companies, though, you know the ones that got in it for the right reasons. And there's like a general theme amongst those guys that everybody you talk to that knows them likes them. And then there's guys that you talk to that maybe a handful of people don't like them. Or, I'm sorry, the guys that a lot of people you talk to like. Maybe there's a handful of people that don't like those guys. But most of the people you talk to that really know them or have worked for them, they like those guys, and there's a reason for that because they got into it for the right reasons. And there are other people that nobody likes. I mean, maybe a handful of people do like them, but most people don't. And I think that's it's more common to be on the flip side of that, though. Where
that's kind of where I fall in.
Yeah. The people got into the hunting industry, and most of us got into it not to make millions, billions of dollars, but to make enough money to do it for a living. You know what I mean? And I think that's, like, we talked to Curbs. I'm going to butcher his name. I don't even have it down. Chris?
I have no idea.
Chris Krebs.
Use clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got it wrote down here somewhere. Brian Krebs. Why did I think was that? Why was I thinking
A,
Krebs?
A, B, C. Brian, yeah, Krebs. Yeah. Tomato, tomato.
Sorry, Brian. I didn't mean to do that. But he's got the Two Bucks podcast where he talks about guys that are getting into – he talks about, like, guys that are in the industry. He has them share their story of how they got into it. And he said that, like, the common theme is they all kind of came from not much, and they just had this idea of what they wanted to do. They had a vision for it, and they were just trying to make it in the hunting industry. And it's not to make millions. It's to make enough that they can make a living and do what they love while they're making that money.
And sometimes that turns into millions.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't.
If you've got a good enough product and you're doing the right things, you're smart enough about it, sure, that could turn into the real trees and mossy oaks in the world. But still, even at their core. But that's one of those guys that you talk to people that have worked for him and that know him. Like, they love him. There's got to be a reason for that, you know. And maybe there's a handful of people that don't like him. But there's a reason that there are people that work for him that do.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And there's
absolutely.
There are plenty of, I think, jerks that get to the top. And they, for whatever reason, they can be jerks and get there. But a lot of times, to start from nothing, it's hard to be a jerk and get to being as successful as they are.
You have that in anything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, not just hunting industry. It's just the way it is in life. You know, and yeah, I know a lot of people that's in power that I don't care much for,
mm-hmm.
but you know, that's just my own personal preference. But
yeah, well, there's also a difference between, I think, becoming that way from humble beginnings and it being handed to you, like in business, especially where let's flip to politics. I don't think.
Did you know where that's where I was going?
90% of people don't like politicians, and that has a lot to do with it because you don't have to be a decent human being to be a good politician.
Right.
Obviously. But to be successful in a business, especially something you started out yourself, it's really hard to be a butthole and get, you know, to where some of those guys are. I think maybe to some extent you have to be. I don't know. You got to be driven like what Brian was talking about. You got to have that vision, but that doesn't mean you have to be a jerk to get there.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times that's probably what keeps a lot of people from getting there.
Yeah.
Like the guys we talk about that we like talking to, pretty similar theme of our guests on the podcast, the guys that are doing it and being successful at it. They're all good dudes. Like you enjoy talking to them. And we could sit here, we talk to them for an hour, but you know, we could talk to them for 3-4 hours, and just because you like talking to them. And that's, I think that's more of a common theme within the hunting industry, which is why, again, circling back to why it's such a close-knit group, or at least it seems like it.
Right.
And there's a lot of guys out there willing to help the other guys come up in the industry, whereas if you're in, like, you're the CEO of Coca-Cola, you're not going to help the guy at Pepsi,
right,
you know, be successful. But it all comes down to being in it for the right reasons.
So what are we going to do with my food plot down there?
You ever bet that shit just went right over his head?
No, it didn't go over my head. I just... I'm just...
Sometimes there are smooth segues where something comes
that
up.
Wasn't
and you,
it.
Can, yeah, that and you can transition like it's going from... Like you're going from fourth to fifth gear and it just slides right in there. And then other times...
slides into ninth. Yeah. I mean, it happens.
And then other times you're in second and you're trying to shift to third, but you knock that thing down into fourth. Like,
you've never obviously drove a 10 speed.
Okay. Sometimes you can skip gears and it works out okay.
Exactly.
Other times you catch somewhere in the middle and the clutch slips and it's a whole bad deal.
Shut her down.
Clutch.
Yeah, you got to start over.
There's a clutch?
Yeah.
Obviously not.
Not in the rig I drive.
But they all get the job done and we all end up in the same place.
Okay there, Bandit. Where were you? Snowman, where was you going with that?
So what are we going to do with the food plot down there by,
I don't know. What are you going to do with
Hamilton County? Well, I've sprayed it. I've killed it. And with the drought coming on, I don't see no reason to plant it until this fall. So I guess our best option is just keep spraying it, keep the material down.
Is it all dead right now?
There's some green coming back up.
If there is there bare dirt? I mean, can you see the dirt?
No, there's no bare dirt.
But everything there's dead for the most part?
For the most part. I mean, there's some green starting to come back through.
We're
going to have to spray it again, obviously.
Sometime between now and early July, if we got like a 60, 70% chance of rain, I would go in and broadcast some buckwheat on it and then spray it the day you broadcast it. Spray your other stuff that's going to be dead, and then this you won't have to keep spraying it. This fall, you'll go in, and you can broadcast whatever you want to do, whether you want to do clover.
Well, I want to do clover.
You can broadcast your clover straight into it, and then what I would probably put there is that inner sanctum, because then you're going to have your clover, so you get yourself a good start on the clover, and you'll have that kale that'll come up even taller, take some of the browse pressure off your clover and chicory, and then you just broadcast that straight into your buckwheat. And then just lay the buckwheat down and spray it, and
yeah, see, we
you're
need,
good to go.
We need to come up with a plan with that. Cause
yep, that's what I would do.
Right now, I'm not.
That's basically what I'm doing at the cabin. That's a couple of like the client places that I've got this year. That's what I'm doing. One of them I was on today. That's what I did. I think that's the best way to do it.
Because I got dead material down there,
mm-hmm.
but there's still some greens starting to come through now.
Yeah, as long as
I was down there, and I ain't been down there since the rain. I don't even know how much rain they got down there, if any.
If you broadcast that stuff before rain, it'll work down through that dead stuff, because that buckwheat just got to be laying on top to grow like clover.
Mm-hmm.
So that's essentially like planting the farmer's planting wheat. It's just a cover crop.
Right.
You just broadcast straight into it in the fall. That's what I would do.
Well, we need to.
And it holds moisture in the ground too.
We need to start thinking about doing something down there.
And give you a little bit of organic matter and whatnot. Breaks up the soil some, too. So
because it ain't going to be very long. We're going to wake up, and it's going to be October.
I know it. That's what I was talking about on the Friday episode.
For about 120 days, give or take.
That, like I'm saying, they ain't going to be very long.
It's another, Friday, today, I guess, when we're recording this, when the episode came out. But just another week closer to October, or halfway through June.
Sometimes I'll start a sentence. And I don't even know where it's going. I just hope I find it along the way.
I have that one saved for you. I just accidentally hit it on the board.
You know, that would have worked really well just about 5 minutes ago. Yeah,
talk about time delay.
Because I am.
Yep. That's how professional we are.
That's right.
Well, give you didn't need that with the segue you had anyhow.
Yeah, that was as smooth a transition as that thing was. My goodness.
Professional.
Yeah. No, that's what I would do. I'm going to do that at the cabin. I got the Milo planted there. I got some nitrogen that I'm going to put on it in. Well, I have to go check it. They say everything I can find on the Milo, and maybe you can confirm or deny this, about the five-leaf stage, whichever stage that is when you want to put nitrogen on Milo.
That's when it has five leaves.
No, I'm saying I understand that
just
part
off
of it.
The top of my head.
I don't think you understood the question, though, or what I was saying. They're saying that stage.
Don't put liquid nitrogen on it.
No.
No, if you put liquid nitrogen on it, you're going to kill it because it'll burn it.
But they said at the five-leaf stage, which even I'm smart enough to know that means when there's 5 weeks on.
You threw me for a curve there for a second.
I didn't really. I thought it was pretty straightforward. But when it gets to that stage, that's when to put nitrogen on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like I said, don't put liquid nitrogen on it because you'll kill it.
Yeah.
You'll burn it down.
So anyway, I've got that at the cabin. I'm going to put some nitrogen on it when it gets to that stage.
Best thing to do, if you're going to put nitrogen on that after it's emerged, is to put it between the rows.
Mm-hmm. Because it needs it, because I'm sure it needs it. I didn't follow all our normal rules that I give people doing food plots. I didn't do a soil test on it. Mm-hmm. And it
shame on you.
It is a new plot.
It's only like $40.
Yeah, I know. But it's coming up.
What was you thinking?
So I wasn't, clearly.
Obviously.
Unfortunately, when you do stuff for other people for a living, and you might understand
this. Oh, now.
your stuff gets pushed off till the end.
Huh.
And you don't always have time to do soil tests or go hunting. So,
or anything else in your life. Yeah.
Why are you bastards looking at me for?
Well, I just thought you might understand that when you do stuff for other people, yours gets
understand.
Pushed off, put off till the end. So that's where I'm at on my food plots.
Lord, do I understand.
Oh, now.
What, your truck driving gets put off?
Truck driving, hay baling.
The driving you're doing for yourself? Or the hay you're baling for your cattle?
Get put off.
It's not for mine.
Driving.
Anyways.
None of it's for mine.
That's why I didn't get a soil test done. But then I got the other half of that I'm going to do in buckwheat here, hopefully before this rain or during this rain if it comes down to it. And then I'll put the fall stuff
we're
right
getting
into
rain?
That. Well, they've changed it so many times since the last Monday.
July.
Yeah. Hopefully sometime between now and the end of July it'll rain.
I don't know if I put all my eggs in that basket or not.
I don't even have any eggs left to put in a basket.
Really?
Yeah, really.
You didn't get cut, did you?
Well, I didn't have eggs to start with.
Oh, okay. Well, you can call them whatever you want.
No, I think they're pretty specific.
Oh, are they?
Well, I think
you can identify as
Yeah.
I can identify as whatever I want. I'm still not going to have eggs.
Okay.
If you start buying tampons, I'm going to be worried
what
about
the
you.
Hell? This ain't no tampon show.
It ain't like I've never bought them before, but they weren't for me.
Well, I'm talking about for you.
No, okay.
Married man's done that once.
Yeah. Hell, you've been married 3 times. You never done that?
Three times.
No, well, maybe that's the problem.
Yeah. What's up with that?
Maybe you should consider someone other than
that
yourself.
That some bitch didn't run off the track.
maybe
it's gone. Just, I mean, we have crashed.
Maybe I'd be a smart man and avoid marriage altogether.
We fell off a river bridge. The trussle is gone.
Yep. That's all right. That's kind of what I figured tonight would be anyway with this crowd. Like I said, Nate's
you
not here
not
to keep us in line.
You did not figure that would come up. That word would come up tonight when we started.
If I had to put money on it, I wouldn't have bet against it.
Yeah, okay. You got me there.
I mean, if Vegas was given the odds, I'm thinking they wouldn't have been too bad. Amongst a lot of other words
you
that we haven't hit
never
yet.
Know. You never know.
That's true. Before we do hit them, though, let's just wrap this thing up.
We better, because things are getting kind of crazy.
Sometimes you just got to wrap it up. You got to know when to do that. Before we do get out of here, though.
That's a good segue.
Yeah. We talked about it a little bit.
Or nuisance or something like that.
We talked about it a little bit earlier.
Nuisance?
I don't know. It's one of them 50-cent words he's been using.
Oh, you mean nuance.
Nuance.
Yeah. Well, you added letters to it. You made it more expensive.
I don't know what he was talking about there.
You said use our change.
I thought you were a lot closer to nuisance than you were nuance.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if nature's essence or what he was talking about.
I don't know either. If you're looking for your own piece of nature,
Lord have mercy,
that you want to manage or hunt,
a whole different place there too.
Or if you have your own piece of nature that you want to sell, Rodney Hawkins, who we talked about earlier, is the guy to talk to. He grew up hunting and fishing in Southern Illinois, just like us, and now he's putting that love for the outdoors into selling recreational properties as a land specialist with Midwest Farm and Land. If you guys haven't heard of them, you haven't been listening to the podcast. But aside from that, they're not your average real estate company. In 2022 alone, they sold over $85 million worth of recreational ground. They've got agents like Rodney all over Illinois, so they're really a local company with a national reach. For more info on them, on what may be on the market, if you want to get your stuff on the market, whatever it is when it comes to real estate, recreational properties. You can just contact Rodney directly at 618-925-3153. He'll get you taken care of. He's also recently started a new company called RG Outdoors. Right now, they've got hard and soft-sided blinds and blind chairs all from Radix Blinds, who we talked about earlier. They've got an all-natural elimination product called Camo Dust, which we're going to try out this fall and see if it keeps Jeff from getting busted by some old doe.
I got a whole can of it right
and
here.
That's right. Busted by more than an old doe.
Yeah. And then he's got Burna self-defense weapons on top of that, and he's also got Tacticam trail cameras now. So if you're interested in anything they've got to offer, if you want to keep up with him on the new products that they got coming, because he's all the time working on new stuff, just send him a message to their Facebook page, RG Outdoors. You can email him, rgoutdoors@yahoo.com, or again, just call Rodney directly at 618-925-3153.
Will this keep you from being busted by the popo, too?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
He did bring that in the shop. I'm definitely going to give that a shot.
I think abiding by the law would keep you from being busted by the popo, but that's just me. Our other sponsor for the podcast.
Well, there goes that.
Damn.
Is Grandpa Ray Outdoors, and for some odd reason, they've been working with us for a while now. They're our longest-standing sponsor. They specialize in providing the best nutrition for white-tailed deer on your property, starting with the soil. They've got a full line of high-quality food plot seed and plant foods. They were started in 2015, but John's been in the seed and nutrition business since 1991. They've got over 14 different food plot blends to choose from, so you won't have any trouble finding what you're looking for. They've got fall and spring blends, corn and beans, switchgrass, liquid fertilizer, soil test kits, you name it, they've got it. These guys are about one too many deep.
Keep going.
I am. Don't worry, I'll power through. So we've used their products some of them are on Jeff's property. We use them over there at the cabin. A lot of our own properties. Nate's used a lot of them. The Inner Sanctum I talked about earlier.
Big D. Don't forget the Big D's property.
And we've used them on client properties all over the Midwest, the West. I mean, as far east as, out east to Louisville, Kentucky, almost down to Tennessee, northern Illinois. Everywhere you've used it. They've been as good as advertised. But they're not just about selling their products. They'll also answer any questions you might have about what blends would be best for your specific property. That way you can achieve the best results possible. Like I said earlier, John and his team, much like us, don't believe in a cookie-cutter approach to wildlife nutrition. They're going to treat you and your situation individually. If you guys want to, support the podcast, support your deer herd, get yourself some good food plot seed or whatever you're looking for, go to GrandpaRayOutdoors.com and use the discount code RHOPODCAST. That's all lowercase, no space, and you get 5% off your entire order there. Also, don't forget to follow us on social media, Ridge Hunter Outdoors on Facebook and Instagram. We have a Facebook group now at RHO Podcast Patrons where we'll post some exclusive content. We're going to post the guests we have coming up when we can so you can ask them questions directly. If you guys have suggestions for something you'd like to hear us talk about, whether that be getting busted by the popo, whether that be trying new things in the deer woods,
buying things for your wife,
tampons, whatever that may be, you guys can suggest
it. I'm looking at the logo here on Camo Dust. Don't get busted, get dusted.
Yeah?
Man, you can't go wrong with that.
No.
No, I mean,
you need to go out and buy you a can.
Yeah. So back to the Facebook group.
Sometimes I'll start a sentence, and I don't even know where it's going. Just hope I find it along the way.
I know sometimes exactly where it's going.
Yeah, okay, so that's why I got that sounder for you. Anyways, there are RHO Podcast Patrons. That's the Facebook group. Nobody's listening at this point anyway, so it doesn't matter.
That's right.
You guys can check it out. Again, suggestions for anything you want us to talk about. We may or may not take them. Any questions you might have for Q&A episodes, anything like that's going to be in that group. I'll also give you guys updates on what's going on with the podcast, so like if we're missing a week or if one's going to be late, an episode's going to be late or something. So go check that group out. Also, our website, RidgeHunterOutdoors.com. That's where we've got our tarsal sprays. That's where we've got our own blend of food plot seed, which we also have at Jeff's. I've got on several client properties now. I've got on some other properties. If you want that, anything else you find on the website, apparel, you can use the discount code RHOPOD. That's all caps, no space, and you get 10% off of everything in your order. Follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Leave us reviews there. That really helps us out as well. It doesn't even cost you anything other than a couple minutes of your life. And then YouTube, subscribe to the channel, like and comment on any of the videos. We got some new stuff coming up there with Jeff's property. We got some vlog video coming out on that one soon. I'll keep you guys updated on the cabin video. And then hopefully this fall we'll have some other stuff coming up for you guys. Like I mentioned on, not this Full Draw Friday, the one that just came out, but the week before, I talked about some stuff that maybe we have going on for the fall. We're going to try to do a little bit more of a traditional YouTube hunting style show if we can get everything lined out. So if you're going to keep an eye out for that, the best way to do that would be to subscribe to the YouTube channel. And then follow us on social as well. We'll always post about that or anything we got coming up. Appreciate you guys tuning in this week. We're going to get out of here before we really get in trouble or get canceled for some reason.
Hey, man, it's been fun.
Or lose a sponsor. anything like that. Thanks for tuning in, guys. We'll catch you again this Friday on Full Draw Friday and then next week for another regular episode.